Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagno. With me, as always, is Eric Schlipp from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, Lions big winners over the Minnesota Vikings 31-29 this past Sunday out at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. They fell behind early, got their way back in it, and Jake Bates was the hero at the end. Lions have the Titans this Sunday at Ford Field. So,
their
how
first...
you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. The Titans are rebuilding. They implementing new schemes on both sides of the ball, and they're going through a lot of the struggles that first year regimes go through. And they're talented, but they don't have a complete team right now, and the game plan hasn't worked for 60 minutes yet, and so. I like their chances of being able to stay ahead of the game or stay ahead of the rest of the NFC here and keep their spot at the top of the NFC and the NFC North.
Vikings in action right now. It's Thursday night, and we'll see how they're doing before we sign off. And hopefully it's good news. You said you before I changed the subject, you did say first this something about the Lions returning some about this Sunday's game. You said you were going to say first.
Oh, I don't know what I was going to
All
say.
right,
I
forget
apologize
it.
for that.
No, don't apologize.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. It's the first AFC opponent of the season for them. So,
oh, really? It is.
Yeah, they've had an all NFC
Yeah, I
opponent
guess.
So
Yeah.
far.
Okay.
This is their first AFC opponent, and it's just a little different way of looking at it. Teams are teams. It's not overly different. You're going to see some similarities between the Titans and a couple other teams that they've seen so far. So it's not like you would see in baseball where there's a big change or anything like that. But
Well, even baseball's changing with the
sure.
designated hitter now in the National League as well. And yes, football is much different than when we were youngsters, when what was the NFC won 14 Super Bowls in a row. You know, that the AFC slash AFL was still lagging a bit behind. Titans, one of the flagship franchises of the AFC,
Yeah.
originally as the Houston Oilers.
Do you know that since they have changed their name to the Tennessee Titans, the Lions have not beaten them?
Oh, really? They never beat the Titans?
0-6. I believe it's
Another,
0-6.
another 6-game. So the another 6-game losing streak, this time from a team that used to be in Texas. And ever since they fled Texas, they've lost 6 in a row, just like how they had the Cowboys run a 6-game losing streak with them.
It's
The revenge court tour continues.
Yeah, it just stacking these, it's first Seattle, then Cowboys, then the announcer curse, Greg Olsen, the Greg Olsen curse,
Yeah,
because I
the
guess
Greg
they
Olsen
hadn't won,
curse.
right? So, yeah, just continuing week after week to stack up, obstacles that have come in their way and knock them down.
Well, real obstacles. They're made up obstacles, just like my curse.
Right, exactly.
All right, let's dig right in. First, the transactions news. The big one this week that everybody that's listening is well aware of: Jameson Williams, 2-game suspension.
Yeah.
He was practicing. He's not going to play this Sunday. No appeal, right?
Yeah, he was debating appealing, and while he was debating appealing, he was able to practice just in case he, wins his appeal and then he has to be ready to go. So he was still within the window to appeal, elects not to appeal, and will take the suspension. Lots of wild speculations out there on what it could
Love
be.
wild speculation.
It's none of it accurate. It's just people kind of trying to put pieces together and make guesses. And it tends to be, disingenuous when you start putting things on people that, you don't know for certain. Essentially, to get a 2-game suspension for this, it had to fall under a category of items. Essentially, it's like a masking type agent, or, which could be anything from like a specific steroid to like a diuretic, like to try and dilute your urine sample to try and
Shades of Charles
test.
Rogers.
So there's a whole big, wide-ranging set of things it could be, and we have no idea what it is. And he doesn't want to say. The NFL doesn't release that
No, they
portion.
don't.
They
Yeah.
just right. So,
HIPAA laws or
yeah, exactly.
although we
So
knew it
like,
was Charles Rogers, it was a diuretic, but maybe those were different times.
yeah, I
Or no,
think
there was
that,
too much water in his urine. I don't,
yeah.
maybe I don't remember. Maybe they did it to us. Maybe that was also wild speculation.
I don't. I seem to re. Yeah, I'm not certain. I don't want to say for certain one way or another, but I know in this situation, we don't know. We don't know what the cause is. We don't know what the result, why it was flagged. All we know is that it falls into this group of a 2-game suspension, and that's about it. Unless Jameson decides to speak out on it, which he has said in a statement he's not going to. It's we may never know, and that's just the reality of the business. So like, I don't know, be cautious, listeners, in listening to, different people who think they know what they're talking about and start making speculations on what it is or what it could be or what it could mean. We don't know. We don't know what it could be. Something innocent. It could be something malicious. It could, we have no idea. What we do know is that the team has doubled and tripled down on saying how much they trust him. He has insisted that it's a mistake. He's not even sure what triggered it, or what he did to trigger it, but he doesn't want to fight it. He just wants to take it and move on and just get it over with. I think having the Titans this week, maybe getting one of those games out of the way, may have come into factor. I don't know. Again, we don't know what his whole reasoning is, but he's decided to accept it and not to contest it. And the Lions have been preparing for life without him, regardless. And so, I think from a Lions standpoint, they'll be okay, because it's just like as if you had an injury, like a 2-game injury. You're without a player for whatever the reason is, and you find ways to adjust. From a JMO standpoint, it's another blemish, whether it's directly his fault, whether it was intentional or an accident. It's still going to be a blemish on his record, and I don't think it's going to be like a, it's not going to be, a devastating blemish or anything like that, but it's certainly another mark against him. And down the road, will that come into play? We'll find out. But for now, he's going to miss the next 2 games, and the Lions will adjust.
Now, more wild speculation once we saw more of Khalif Raymond on last Sunday because they knew it was coming.
No. That was a post-buy thing. They said they wanted to get Khalif involved. They recognized that he wasn't very involved the first month of the season. They wanted to get him involved, and he's been involved the last 2 games. So that wasn't anything directly related to this at all.
All right, they're definitely going to miss him, even though the
Yeah.
Titans aren't the greatest squad. They
Sure.
they're still an NFL team, and any NFL team can beat another one. Just takes the right Sunday to do it, and then definitely missing him against the Packers is going to be it's going to be
Yeah.
rough. If he does, he's not making plays all the time, but he makes a lot of big plays, and
Sure.
the offense has another dimension when he's out on the field.
Yeah, he's a great blocker. He draws coverage. There's a JMO impact. The way they're going to have to adjust that is when they need elements to run defenses off or stretch zones. You might see Khalif in the starting lineup. When you have more blocking situations, you're going to see more Allen Robinson, which means you may see more Allen Robinson in general, because I think that role tends to block quite a bit as opposed to stretch as much as it used to. And so, it makes him look really smart for signing both Tim Robinson and Allen, or I'm sorry, Tim
Tim
Patrick
Patrick, yep.
and Allen Robinson, instead of just one, and adding that extra depth should pay off this week in this situation. And then you still have Isaiah Williams sitting there as well, if you decide that you want to try him out as well. He got a lot of real positive attaboys from Dan Campbell, talking about how he is he's been playing real well on the scout team, and you know, it's possible that he finds his way onto the game day active roster as well, right? Like he'll find his he'll get a shot as a wide receiver five, maybe get some special teams, maybe a play or two that he'll be involved in handful of snaps, but it seems like he could easily get an opportunity this week as well.
All right. Moving on to the injured list. First one, resting on Wednesday, full practice on Thursday. Frank Ragnow, Taylor Decker, Graham Glasgow, and Levi Onwuzurike. A big group of them.
Yeah, they all got a day off, and then they're all back in full. It's just to give them a little
Veteran day of
break.
rest.
Yeah, you rest your veteran offensive line guys, and Levi, you just make sure he's good to go because you're going to need him. You want him to last through the season, so they show up on the injury report just because they took the day off.
Right guard, Kevin Zeitler, groin injury, back to full practice Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, two full practices is a real good indicator he should be back in the starting lineup. So that's real positive news for him.
I guess we got to mention it before we get into the Vikings review. Awashika had a very rough start to the game. He was,
Yes.
you could point to him being the main reason why they got into the 10-0 hole.
Oh, yeah.
Played a
Yeah.
lot better as the game went on. Or they found a
Yeah.
way just to not emphasize him so much in the offense.
Yeah, Zeitler is he's just a different level of strength. Than Coyote has, and
Cody.
so they just played like stylistically different. Yodi's more athletic, I think, than he is power. Boris Zeitler is more power. We've talked in the past about how right guard is a power spot that they want to, you know, add bulk to, and he was getting pushed around, and he just. He's not quite as well suited for that right guard position as he is the left. And Zeitler will be needed this week. They have very strong Titans have a very strong interior duo, and they will need a right guard who can push people around, and so he'll be welcome back and probably needed.
Offensive lineman Josh Pascal, illness, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
So it's interesting because he left the game twice with an injury, returned from those injuries both times, played 97%, or I'm sorry, 87% of the snaps, something like 52 out of 60 snaps or something along those lines. And yet he doesn't have an injury, he has an illness. Illnesses we've talked about in the past can be kind of wonky. It could be something that's like a 24, 48-hour bug, and then he's back on the practice field and ready to go. Or it could be something that lingers a little bit. With illness being a wide-ranging variety of things, and us not knowing what the illness is, we just kind of like we don't have a really good we don't have something anything to really base it off of, right? Like we can't say. Oh, you know, well, for like a hamstring injury, we know, or a groin injury, we know it's about a week to 10 days and there should be ready to go. For an illness, it could be 24 hours, it could be a week. And so we're just kind of left lingering here with Pascal. Hopefully we find out more from Dan Campbell on Friday.
All right, offensive lineman Christian Mahogany, non-football illness, mononucleosis, still in the evaluation window.
So this is the third week of his 21-day process. He's got one more practice on Friday. He'll most likely be ruled out for the game, and then they will go through the game, and they will then have about roughly 48 hours to make a decision on when what they're going to do with him. Are they going to put him on the active roster where he can continue to practice, or are they going to shut him down for the season? And when he was first active, we talked about this. Michael Neese is probably the most direct one-to-one comparison for him. They're both the Lions essentially backup right guards. Neese has the ability to play center, which makes him valuable. But Coyote is the preferred interior lineman. And are you willing to maybe go light at tackle? I don't know. It's hard to tell, but I don't see them keeping 11 offensive linemen And if they really want to keep Mahogany on the roster to develop him, it could be
Shut
a
him down.
question of, yeah, it's a question of is it him or Nice? And we'll probably find out like Tuesday on what happens there.
Right. Let's talk about the Vikings game. First off, they did something that we said would be worst case scenario. If they do it, they get down 10 early.
Yeah.
They have to make the big rally in the second to take the lead. I felt really bad after that game started with that the Vikings opening winning up Vikings up 10 nothing.
Yeah, it certainly looked about as bad as it could. You don't, you get the ball first, you can't really do anything with it, and you're like, okay, it's going to be a tough day offensively. They get the ball back, they score on a run where you lose your outside contain, and you're like, man, if this is the way that they're going to, perform post Hutchinson,
Yeah,
there it's going to be long. It's going to be a hard road because you had about three guys that were in spots to kind of set the edge, and none of them did. So it looks certainly bad, and then you get it back. You struggle again. Then you go for it on fourth down. You fail miserably, and you fortunately hold up, and they have to kick the field goal. So, but it's about as bad a start as you could have, short of if they would have scored a second time, and then they got settled in, and most teams are not able to overcome double digit losses to the Vikings. Or I'm sorry, double digit deficits to the Vikings. But the Lions, once they got settled in, they showed how explosive of an offense they are. 21 point second quarter, and then it just became a fist fight from that point on out. Mistakes on both sides, big plays on both sides, explosive plays on both sides, and ends up having a real nice game. You get your production out of your stars. Goff has a quarterback rating of 140, his third game in a row of 140. Amon-Ra goes over 100 yards receiving. Gibbs goes for 160 all-purpose yards plus a couple of scores. Amon-Ra got a score. And you got the production out of the big teams, right? So it was a very good day offensively. Anything you about the offense you wanted to highlight? Because I thought there were some pretty fun moments.
Most importantly, like the first three drives, they only ran 10 plays. They only gained 16 yards on those 10 plays. It wasn't three, it was four and out, three and out, three and out, and then boom, the next four down, four, next four drives, touchdown, 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 touchdown. All of them 70-yard drives, each and every one of them. One was an 83, right? Like it's impressive how they got everything together. It was good to see in the third quarter that they played Minnesota to a draw. They didn't play a bad third quarter. They were able to sustain the ball and score on offense, and they give up a touchdown on defense, but at least they kept it even. Oh, well, no, they didn't. Yeah, they kept it even because the Vikings end up scoring in the fourth quarter on their drive that starts at the end of the third quarter. Yeah, just like you mentioned, the stars really stepped up, except for Laporta. I mean, that's not even saying that he didn't step up. He's just not getting the ball for whatever reason, and maybe we see that change against the Titans. But
I think so.
yeah, Montgomery, the fumble that was near devastating. Say, oh
Close.
no, like what we like, especially late in the game, he knows better than this, But otherwise. You got a great performance. Even my great, you just didn't have a lot of yards rushing. Still was able to produce, Yeah, this and Goff, the numbers on Goff over the last was the his completion percentage over the last four games, unmatched in NFL history.
Yeah, and he's one of four, or I'm sorry, him plus three others make up four guys that have had 140-yard quarterback rating three games in a row. If he goes again, I think he's so low in that. Just like crazy impressive numbers, right? Like he just can't he's just making right decisions. He's making strong decisions. He's feeling comfortable in the pocket. He's just as sharp as we've seen him in a long time. And it's awfully fun to watch when a quarterback is playing at his peak, which it sure seems like that's where he's been the last three games.
All right. I guess that's enough of the offense. Conversely, now looking at the defense, defense plays all right. We had basically the two teams had the exact same stats, on
Yeah, that was
offensive
crazy.
stats, which is interesting to see that. But defensively, they gave up the one big run to Jones, but they held him under 100 yards rushing. Not a ton of bad things to say. I mean, it wasn't a bad performance for the first game without Hutchinson.
Branch looked great again. Got the interception was sensational.
Talking defensive player of the year for him.
It's
He doesn't have enough cachet yet to get it, but
yeah,
he sure
he's
is playing like it so far.
if he leads the league in interceptions, he has a real shot at it, I think, right? If he keeps playing the way he's playing and then overtakes the safety in the Green Bay, then good shot. He could be in that conversation. I think from a struggle standpoint, they tried blitzing a ton to add pressure. Pressure just didn't get home. We talked about the edge players, having to basically be edge setters instead of pass rushers, which I thought was okay. The interior didn't give me as much as I would want. The pass ru the blitzing linebackers didn't give me as much as I was hoping for. Now, to their credit, they did get four sacks, one from Pascal and three from linebackers. But they didn't really come in traditional ways.
No.
They were more like
Even when you think
play.
about the Rodriguez sack, as Darnold was scrambling, you just happened to tackle him 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage. Like, then the pass rush wasn't sustained throughout the entire game.
15 pressures in total per PFF, which is I think the lowest output of the year for them. I mean, there was a game a couple games ago where Hutchinson had 15 on his own. Is it Seattle? Maybe that was the game or something like that.
Yeah, right. That sounds right.
It
Because
was
it wasn't the Tampa game where he had the force, it was a different game.
And so yeah, so I think there's some unanswered questions there. You have to keep into consideration it was their first game without Hutchinson. They were trying to figure stuff out. But I don't know, even if they got some improvement from these players that they have, I don't know if they'll ever get to the level that they want. And that means they'll have to lean on their secondary to play at a high level all the time. And that's a tough ask. And so I do expect something to happen, right? I expect them to try and make a move to figure something out because they don't really have any answer right now. And maybe it'll come. Maybe it'll come with scheme. Maybe it'll come with players getting put in better spots. I don't know,
I
but
don't know. I mean,
it's tough right now.
what we saw on Sunday was kind of best case scenario without Hutchinson, right? They're not going to get a sustained pass rush. They are going to get four sacks. They're going to find a way to get four sacks. But like Darnold, luckily we're facing Sam Darnold, but Darnold was pretty much free to throw, So it kind of made it more clear that like, they need to do something. They need to make a trade, and they're not blind to this. It's just, will they be able to make the deal? They can. A, do they have a player in mind that they want that fits what they do? And do they have the ammunition to get them all the, there's a bunch of
And are they
pieces.
willing to give it up too, right? I mean,
Well,
like
you
they
would
may.
hope they would be. I mean, they are trying to win the Super Bowl.
I mean, so the trade deadline, it's still a week and a
The
half
fifth,
away.
yeah, week and a half. A little bit more than a week and a half.
So there's still a little bit of time, but
Some trades are getting completed because that was the one thing I was talking
lots of
about. Say,
riders.
well, it's gonna come down to the wire before they make a move. But other guys are getting traded, so
I
if they
mean,
do make a move, maybe they could do it right away.
the Titans have traded two starters this week. So like it's definitely, but we haven't really seen the edge rushers move, and I wonder if teams are waiting to set the market. I know teams the trading teams have a little bit of leverage right now.
Right.
And so I'm sure that's making Brad Holmes and company a little bit more hesitant, trying to get the right,
Leery.
trying to get the right price instead of overpaying. It definitely fits his MO. But yeah, I do think this game, kind of confirmed some of the concerns that we had. They will get a little bit better. They will add some more, they will have, they'll try different things. They'll try rushes. They'll try different blitzes. They'll try a whole variety of things. That's the thing. One of the real positives about Aaron Glenn is that he doesn't really rest on what he has. He does constantly look to get better. And, but I just, it's hard for me to say there would be a significant change beyond adding a player, by a trade.
Also, that you were, this is going back to a little bit to what you were saying before.
Sure.
Everybody kind of knew, in the football world that the Lions could use more pass rush. They could use somebody opposite of
Yeah.
Hutchinson. And now that they lose him, like everybody know, the spotlight is on them. Like, oh, the
Oh, yeah.
Lions definitely need somebody. And like you said,
Yeah.
they're all waiting for the market to be set. They're waiting for the Lions to make the move, and they're hoping that they sell the farm to get whoever it is. And yeah, that's going to be tough to work against, it's
Yeah.
that
It's
curse
one
comes into play.
it's the NFL.com wrote an article, I think this morning, about buyers and sellers. And when they got to the Lions, they were like, this is the most glaring and obvious need in all of the NFL that the Lions need a pass rusher. And so yeah, you'll they just I don't I just don't the Holmes doesn't want to overpay. I don't think he will overpay, and might make things a little bit more challenging for coaches, but I think the way that Holmes approaches roster building, it's hard to argue against his strategy.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, you're right. He is doing everything right, and I
Yeah.
get it's this balance. And yes, he does.
It's a
He
tough
it's
balance.
his team. He knows best. And but the balance, like this team is good enough. This team, it's not actually. I should say it's not good enough, but it's right there.
Yeah,
I'm sure
certainly.
his goal is to win a Super Bowl one day, and I know he talks about building a sustained winner. And you would think he would trust himself enough to, like, well, we can mortgage a little bit of this because we're
I'm
going to
such a
figure
good
out a way,
drafter.
even if we do
Yeah.
that. Yeah. So,
No, I'm with you.
all right, let's move on from there.
Yeah,
Oh,
let's
go
wrap
ahead.
it up. Let's go back to Jake. Let's wrap this up with Jake Bates.
Yeah, of course, the hero.
So let's talk that final drive. They get the ball back with like 2.5 minutes. And I talked to Jeremy about this earlier in the week, about the conviction from the coaching staffs were very different. And we see this often with different coaches or around the NFL. You see this, especially with the coaches within the NFC North. They, outside of Dan Campbell, I don't know if the coaches in the NFC North have the same conviction in their decision making the way that Dan Campbell does. And I think that really separates him in a lot of ways. The Vikings want to run the clock out. So they run the ball on first down, run the ball on second down, and then they overthrow the th on third down very poorly. So if your strategy is to drain the clock, which you're doing on first the first two downs, and you're not getting progress, and then you throw on third down, it is, and then it ends up being incomplete. It's very counter to what you just did on the first two downs.
Right.
You're not, pick a direction and work with that direction. Either go for the first downs where you can get new sets, new drives, new and chip away at the time that
Yeah,
way,
then
or
eventually get to running down the clock, yeah.
exactly, or just run it down and keep sticking with the run, one or the other. And when you kind of mix them both up, you don't have really have a conviction on one way or another, and you end up giving the ball back, and the
With
Lions have
piles
two
of
and a half,
time.
2.5 minutes, yeah. And so much time that the Lions are like, we're going to run one play and just let 30 seconds go off the clock just
Right.
to get it down to the 2 minute warning because we don't
Because,
want time on the clock either.
yeah, they don't want to put themselves in the position the Vikings put themselves.
Exactly. Now, once they hit that 2 minute warning, it's run with Gibbs and then a big run with Gibbs. And then they pass one out to Gibbs and then they pass to Amon-Ra. And once they get into that field goal range, it's let's try a run again to see if we can keep gashing them. And they go to Gibbs. He tries to get there. They kind of hold him up and start punching at the ball, and he has to cover up. And then Brad Holmes or Dan Campbell says, "Well, let's not even risk it. Let's just take some knees." And part of me is like, man,
You gotta get closer. You gotta
if
get
you,
closer.
yeah, I'm like, you're at like 40 yards or 42 yards right now. If you take knees, it's going to be 44, 45.
Yep. Ended up
You're
being
still going to
44.
have, you're still going to have 15 minutes left or 15 seconds left on the clock.
That was the other concern.
I'm like, but if you get one more first down, you can just run it down to nothing and it's a shorter drive. But they figured they were that confident in Jake Bates' ability to kick it from that range that they were like, it's more important to us to run the clock than to get him more room because we believe he has the leg. We have confidence that he's going to make it.
You got to be confident in him twice, actually. Not only does
Whew.
he make it, he doesn't kick the ball out of bounds at the ensuing kickoff.
Right. No,
You
yeah,
know, we see that
certainly.
happen a lot. I know that's kind of a dumb thing. It's like, well, guys don't really do that. It's like, well, it's more often than you think in these end of game situations.
Yeah. Yeah, because Greg Olsen was screaming about putting the ball in play to make them
Right.
run the
Yeah. It's
clock.
like,
And
all right, easy, Greg Olsen.
I was like, no, they're just going to kick it
Right.
out.
Don't leave anything to chance.
But it's really unbelievable confidence in Jake Bates to say, I'm going to kick this ball. And it reminded me of 2 years ago in Minnesota when they had a chance to win it. And they elected not to go for the field goal and they elected to punt it. You remember that? And
Right.
then they end up giving the ball back with too much time. And then the Vikings go down score and beat them. And he was that was the post game where he was crying at the presser. And he was talking about how upset he was that he gave the game away and how it was all his mistake. And that's all I kept thinking about when I got in that situation was I'm like, there is no way he's going for this field goal. And to kill the demons from 2 years ago. And once he got in that range, man, it was he stopped. So personally, I would have loved to have seen him go a little bit more. I understand why he did it, but I wanted one more first down. Do you
Especially
have,
with the way they were rolling all the
yeah.
way down the field.
So what, I mean, do you think they should have gone for one more, or were you comfortable with what
Yeah,
they where they did it?
no. I weirdly thought he was going to make the kick. And when they started kneeling, it's like, oh yeah, 44 yards. He's going to make it. It's not going to be a problem. I don't know. I'm usually not like that, but I'm like, oh, yeah, this one looks good. I'm on your boat, though. I want to get as many yards as I can.
Right.
I felt confident that he was going to make it, but I do agree with you about how, because just about your convict talking about the coach's conviction. They were like, we're going to keep moving this ball down the field and we're not going to leave them any time left. And then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, forget it. We'll just stay here and we'll kick it and give them 19 seconds. And you know, Sam Darnold's not Mahomes, so they're not going to get to the 40, the other 40 in those 19 seconds. You know, we'll find a
Right.
way.
And then they end up finding a loophole in the system, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I
Of
wonder.
course. Of course, the curse comes into play. Forgot you know.
I wonder if they knew that rule.
I don't think so. I have a feeling they didn't.
See, when it happened, I thought they knew it. I'm like, oh, they know it. But then when I went back and I watched the way that they were setting up and everything
Yeah,
like
they're
that,
trying to
I
get
don't
lined
think,
up right. Yeah.
yeah, I don't think they knew. I don't think that that was like a cheat the system type of thing. I think
No.
they just got fortunate about the way it unfolded.
Now everybody's just going to hang around in the center, and the quarterback is just going to run down to the ball,
I
you
know,
know,
because
and
that's
just
really
snap
all
it
you
with the two
need.
of them. That's yeah, and just
Yeah. As long
spike
as
the
everyone
ball, and
else
that's
is,
it.
as long as everyone is standing
Yeah, just
and
stand where you are.
and the quarterback and the quarter and center are in place, it's fine. No 10-second runoff. I also think that might get corrected this
Yeah,
year.
I would. That feels like something, a rule that's going to be fixed.
Because I know the Lions will propose that. Like that Lions, like,
Sure.
and most of the rules that the Lions propose pass. So, I absolutely think that they would do it.
I wonder if anybody, I mean, obviously the refs are aware of it. I don't know if they really thought about it because that rule feels like something Belichick would have done in a game, or like had always had in the back of Brady's head. You know, it's like, you know, we're not going to get the run. Or when did they bring in the tech? I mean, the 10-second runoff's been around for forever.
A
So it's
while,
like,
yes.
it's like, always keep this in the back of your mind, you
The
know?
thing
And
is
maybe they've never needed it, but.
you don't even need it to be the quarterback in the center. You just need two
Yeah,
players.
any two guys. No, good point.
Yeah,
The two
you like
closest guys to the ball. Just go
yeah,
do it.
whoever catches the ball, just hand it to the ref, hand it back to you, and then you snap it.
Right.
Like, and then you're good.
Does the snap even have to go now this break, does the snap even have to go between your legs? I can't remember if that's a rule.
I don't
Where the
know, but
guy
I
can
ha
just pick it up and hand it to, you know, the other guy, and
but you
although
have
by then
to,
somebody's blowing up somebody else, the
right?
ball starts rolling.
You still have to spike the ball though. Like you still have to
No, I
execute
get
a
it.
snap and a spike in order for it to work. But yeah, I don't
Two
know. They
random
might be
guys
able
executing a snap, though, is not
a
the easiest thing.
100%. No, definitely not.
But maybe everybody works on it in practice a little bit.
Yeah, you spend one day after like at the last 15 minutes and everybody gets a snap, everybody gets a hold or to receive it. All right. We've gone a
That's
little off
enough of
the rails.
that. We are off the rails. Campbell, back to Campbell, the fake punt early on in the game that felt especially boneheaded.
Yeah, they got the, they got the
Especially putting the
look.
man in motion.
Yeah, I'm not even upset with that as much as I was the execution was just terrible. You had the look you wanted. So like basically when they get
Yep.
set up, they've got three guys to the right, three blockers to the right, plus the runner plus the pitch man. So you're basically going with five guys. And they only have three. So you basically have three on three plus your runner plus your pitch guy. And then you're just trying to get to the outside. The problem was all three blockers blocked the wrong guy. And the outside guy, which was Craig, didn't take the very outside guy. He took the guy directly in front of him. It looked like one of the linebackers was trying to reach to the outside, but got caught up in traffic and couldn't get there, which shut down the pitch option. And then the other rush guy was trying to go up to his guy, realized his guy was getting clawed up, and then he tried to go back and he missed hit that third guy. And it was just execution was horrible. They got the look they want. I don't like calling a fourth down fake run on that at that down and distance. But yeah, I mean they got the look they wanted. It's one of those things that as soon as they snapped it to him, I thought, well, they're done. Like there's no way that's working. Like immediately, everything looked disheveled from the snap. I didn't like it.
It's less demoralizing though that the Vikings scored on the second play they had the ball in a way. Instead of them slowly killing you after that fake punt, it's like, well, they scored right away. You just kind of imagine, oh, it's like an interception return for a touchdown or a fumble for a touchdown. We can
Sure.
move on from this. Yeah.
It holding them on that to a field goal
No,
was
they scored. They scored
yeah,
six after that. That
was
was
it?
the Aaron Jones. That was the first drive where
Oh
Aaron
God, it was
Jones
the
scored
first
the
drive. It
touchdown
was the first drive.
on
I
the
was thinking it was the
34-yard
second
run.
there. You're right. Yeah, not great. Yeah, I didn't like that call, but I think look, overall, it's a tough win. Like that's probably your toughest. It's probably going to be your toughest divisional road game, which
I
means
don't know, next week in Lambeau is going to be tough too.
I do think Lambeau is going to be hard, but at Minnesota has always been a problem for them of late, and Minnesota has been better than Green Bay has this year, and so I could easily argue that I think this could be their toughest. Again, divisional road game of the year. Then you get your, regardless, you're getting your two toughest road games, divisional road games out of the way here in the next week. You'll have them both behind you. And if you can come out with victories, my goodness, you're going to be in a great spot. And it's going to get fun once you get to around, thanks just before Thanksgiving. You got to get past Houston, and then after that, start getting more home games again and starting to have a little bit more fun. So right now they sit atop the NFC North. They sit atop the NFC, and they're in a good spot.
Yeah, they
Very good
sure are.
spot.
And moving on from that top spot, they're going to play the Tennessee Titans at Ford Field on Sunday. Lions favored by 10.5. This is the biggest line in the Lions' favor in 7 years. Is that the information? I'm surprised it's only 7 years. I thought we'd have to go back further than that.
Well, it was, you remember when the Browns went 0-16? It was that Browns team that was that they were favored by 10.5 over. So it was a pretty terrible Browns team. And they shellacked the Browns that year too. It wasn't even close. That year Browns were horrible. Now that's 10.5 is where it is on most sites. Some sites have it at 11, but most have it around 10.5. Interesting enough, when DraftKings came out, it was 12. And when I went back and looked at when I told Jeremy it was 12, and he's like, when's the last time it was 12? And I'm like, I have no idea. So we went back and looked at the last time they were
History.
12 point under. It was in the 90s. Like 96 or something like that, or that they were last time they were favored by that much. So it's been a while. It's been a while since we've seen a line this big.
Fox crew for the game, Kevin Kugler, Daryl Johnston, and Laura Oakman down on the field. Now, Daryl Johnston used to be doing all of our games. It was always the Daryl Johnston crew. I don't, this is probably the first time we've seen him this year, I think.
Oh yeah. Yes. 'Cause you've had Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night, and then 4 o'clock. And so, yeah, this is definitely the first time we've seen these guys. I think this is more about the Titans not being very good than anything.
Right. Yeah,
And
then it's
then
about the
them looking at
Lions.
the other, yeah, the Lions are, it, they're not expecting this game to be close. This is the biggest mismatch, according to Vegas,
Oh boy.
of the
Of the
week.
week. Yep.
Right. So that's, you send a mid-tier broadcasting crew
TV
in.
crew. Referees Carl Cheffers, 25-year NFL vet, 17 as a referee. Also been the ref in 3 Super Bowls, averaging 9 penalties per game, way under average. They want to get this one over early.
It's funny because you've got a mid-tier broadcasting team, yet probably the most experienced referee in the whole league calling the game. I know it's not like purposeful. It's just it's interesting how that works out.
Titans are 1-5, the only win over the Dolphins. They didn't have Tua. That was what, 3 weeks ago, or 4 weeks ago. Well, in the middle of the season so
Is
far. They've lost to,
week four, week four.
okay, week four. Lost to the Packers, lost to the Bears, lose to the Jets and the Colts and the Bills. So they, a lot of pretty good teams they've lost to, or three of them are. Two of them are middling.
So basically the way this works is Levis, their second year quarterback, he played well last year, big arm athlete, but has struggled this year. The poor kid, going back to his college days, he has had four different offensive coordinators have give him four different offensive schemes in the last 4 years he's played. So like the kid just doesn't get a break. He's had to relearn four different a new scheme every year for the last 4 years. This one doesn't cooperate with him just yet. He goes 0-3 to start the season. They play Miami in week four, and he injures his shoulder. When he injures his shoulder, Mason Rudolph comes in. And Mason Rudolph leads them to their first and only win on the season. They go into a bye, come out of the bye, and Levis is he's ready to go again. And so they put him back in, and they lose to the Colts. And then all of a sudden, his injury has all of a sudden become a problem again. And so they sit him back down, even though he was fine for 2 weeks after being injured. And then they sit him back down because of that injury against the Bills, and they put Mason Rudolph back in, you know, the guy who's got them their only win. And then he ends up not doing very well, and the Bills beat them. And so
Handily.
now, yeah. Well, they were up 10, which is interesting. They were up 10, and then the Bills just laid it
Scored
on them.
34 unanswered.
Yeah, it was bad. So this week they're continuing to take it slow with Levis, and it sure looks like it's going to be Mason Rudolph again. You know, they're insisting that Levis's injury is legit. It's just a weird, the optics are terrible, and it's certainly weird to have him have the injury, be okay, then the injury comes back, and I don't know, it's a little quirky, I guess, being a shoulder, but yeah, the optics certainly look bad that they're switching these guys around and pointing to injuries that happened 4 weeks ago as being the catalyst for why.
DVOA rankings, Lions overall are number two. The Titans are 27th. Titans have a good defense, ranked 11th overall, 15th against the pass, 6th against the rush, whereas the Lions offense is number four, 7th passing and second rushing. Flipping it over the other way, the Lions defense is 5th overall, with the Titans offense being way down at number 27. Only amazingly, running through the stats the Titans have put up. And I know DVOA rankings work a little bit differently than just straight
Sure.
up stats, but it's shocking that the Titans passing game is 29th, that there's three teams worse than them throwing the ball. Lions defense against the pass is number five. Lions down at number 13 against the run. Titans are 18th best at running the ball. Worst special teams in the league, according to DVOA, for the Titans. Lions are up at number eight.
When I wrote up the schemes, breaking down the schemes of the Titans, the offensive and defensive schemes, it's a new article that I do this year. I used to do little blurbs at the beginning of my Keys to Victory article. Now I kind of pulled that out and write a more extensive piece. I focused on the offense's production, and I wanted to point out like where they were bad, and the list just kept getting longer and longer and longer and longer. Like you can basically pick a stat other than like rushing yards after contact, and they're all like in the bottom seven in like almost every single category. Like you can pick one, and that's where they're bad, right? Like they're not putting up yards per drive are bad. Per game are bad, per catch are bad. Their yards, even in the areas that they're good, they struggle. For example, Tony Pollard, their running back, is averaging 4.3 yards per run, right? Which is great. That's a very respectable number. The issue is he's getting 4.25 of those 4.3 yards after contact, which actually is like second in the whole league or something like that.
It's got to be close to leading the league.
But that's because he's getting contacted within a half yard of within a half yard of the line of scrimmage on average, right? Which is worse than the league. Like he's getting almost no push on like 56% of his runs. He's getting hit at or behind the line of scrimmage. Like he's just not getting a push. So it's like he's almost him alone, not just the blocking scheme or anything like that. Like him alone and what he's able to do is really the best part of their whole offense. So like everything else is kind of like it's just not working. They turn the ball over. They turn the ball over two times a game on average. That's second worst in the league. They allow pressures at a very high pace. They're like 25th in the league there. Sacks allowed is really near the. I mean, it's everything that they do. Even their three and outs, they have more three and outs than 29 other teams. It's all just. it's just all not working. Like I said, literally the only thing that's working from an offensive standpoint, consistently working, is Tony Pollard's ability to gain yards after contact. That's it. Everything else is pretty rough right now for their offense.
So far, a rough go for head coach Brian Callahan. Another nepotism hire.
Oh yeah, certainly. It's a very interesting story with him. If you allow me the leeway here.
No, of course, that's what the show's all about.
So yeah, we all know Brian Callahan's dad, Bill Callahan, who a legendary offensive line coach, right? It's been around for a long time, very successful in what he does.
Former head coach in Nebraska.
And he is, so Brian is his son. Brian played his high school football at De La Salle in California. His running back
Very
was,
well-known high school football program.
his running back was Maurice Jones-Drew, if that, for reference here. Him and Maurice Jones-Drew went to UCLA together to play football, and he had a wide receiver on his high school team named Nick Holes. All right. Now, Brian gets into the league after his NFL career really kind of doesn't go anywhere. He ends up actually joining the Lions in 2016 and 17 as their quarterbacks coach. Jim Bob Cooter gets promoted from quarterbacks coach to offensive coordinator, and then Callahan is the guy they bring in to be their quarterbacks coach for Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford during the 2006 and 2006, 2016 and 17 seasons. He eventually ends up with the Bengals, and when he's with the Bengals, he ends up working his way to be offensive coordinator. The issue here, or the unusualness here, is that Zach Taylor, the Bengals coach, is also their offensive play caller. So Brian Callahan spent several years as the offensive coordinator, but he's never called
Called plays.
plays as an offensive coordinator. So when he gets the job here, he implements a similar system where now, even though he's never called plays before, he is now calling offensive plays as the head coach, and he's making his offensive coordinator go through the same system that he had back with in Cincinnati, where the offensive coordinator does everything except call the plays and just is supposed to sit and learn, and the head coach has all the responsibility of executing the offense. And his offensive coordinator is Nick Holes, his high school receiver, the guy he played high school football with. So
It's a
again,
beautiful story. Conquering the NFL.
so Nick Holes got his start at Nebraska, ironically, and then joined Jim Harbaugh's staff at Stanford, parlayed that into a Raiders job, spent a decade with the Raiders. Three head coaches he lasted through with the Raiders. Very interesting enough. He really started making his name known when he got under John Gruden. That's where he reconnected with Callahan again, because Callahan was on Gruden's staff as well. And the two of them used Gruden's influence along with Zach Taylor's influence to kind of mold what their offense looks like.
All right. Let's start going through the Titans roster. I already kind of talked about the quarterback situation, likely going to be Mason Rudolph on Sunday, who is a consistent below average quarterback. And that's being nice, right? Like he's not great, but he's at least consistent, below average quarterback. Will Levis being developed, he's tried to play a lot of hero balls, turned over the ball a lot, and as Eric
Yes.
pointed out, kind of suffering an injury.
Yeah. So, like, Levis is a young, big-armed, mobile quarterback who's reckless. Whereas Rudolph is not as reckless, but not as efficient. He doesn't have the big arm. Accuracy is probably lower than Levis's as well. But he's a veteran, and he's consistently consistent, I guess. Like, consistently below
You get
average
what you get
consistent.
out of them, yep.
Yeah. Interesting enough, if they were playing Levis, I think they might have blitzed a little bit more, because you see Levis struggle with the blitz
Yeah, get
quite
him
a
to make
bit,
mistakes. Yep.
whereas Rudolph doesn't struggle with the blitz as much. And so I do wonder if they'll just be like, we're going to focus on stopping the run and not worry about trying to, get home on you and just let you be below average. So it'll be interesting to see how they attack him, but he'll have a little bit more poise and a little bit more patience. He won't be as reckless with the ball, but he's still he's probably not one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the league, and he's going to be starting.
Running back situation is Tony Pollard, Tyjae Spears, and Julius Chestnut. As you pointed out about Pollard, the one kind of bright spot of the Titans offense where he's getting 4.25 yards after first contact, but their rushing stats aren't setting the world on fire, although getting 113 yards per game on average.
So Pollard will play about 75% of the snaps. Tyjae Spears, I think, is a really underrated running back. He gets about 20, and then the Chestnut is there. He gets like
The
about
mop-up
five.
man. Yeah.
Yeah. When Spears has been hurt last couple of games, he's been limited this week, so he might return. But when he returns, that'll go like to be like a like I said 75-25 split. When Spears was out, Pollard just took them all. Like he was getting like 90% of the snaps or something like that. So like he's definitely their preferred option. Even though I think Spears is a guy you need to be conscious of, talented player in my mind, and a guy that I think the Lions would have considered had they not drafted Jahmyr Gibbs in the 23 draft.
Wide receiver group has taken a hit over the last few days with the trade of DeAndre Hopkins over to Kansas City, but they still have Calvin Ridley, Tyler Boyd, Nick Westbrook, Ekene, Jaquan Johnson, and with Treylon Burks being on IR and Colton Dowell being out.
So they like Hopkins and Boyd saw about 60-70% of the snaps. Ridley saw about 80% of the snaps. The Westbrook saw anywhere from 20% to 50%. Like he's a guy they like as a young developing player. My guess is he's the one who steps up in Hopkins' spot. Which means he'll go from like 20 to 40 up to like probably like 60 to 70, maybe even a little bit more, because the depth isn't going to be there. So everybody may uptick a little bit of their plays. They will they basically split their time between 11 personnel and 12 personnel. So you get a lot of three wide receiver sets. But with trading Hopkins, I do expect to see more 12, which means more two tight end sets. It's going to help them in their run game. And they have, I believe, five tight ends on their roster. So they typically only use three, but they've got the depth. They like the guys they have. And so I am kind of expecting them to lean more towards more two tight end sets. And for the Lions, I think that's fine because the Lions run a lot of base. And so it could just mean the Lions run even more base, and their lines are very comfortable with those two tight end sets. So, to make matters worse, though, with the receivers, Calvin Ridley has not practiced this week. He's missed both practices and is in danger of missing the game, which means they could be replacing both of their outside starters, and may only have an aging Tyler Boyd as their top option in the wide receiver passing game, which would be a little rough for them.
If Ridley was healthy, they would have Ridley and Boyd, who are, the solid but not spectacular NFL professional receivers, right? This is definitely, I'm going to say this is the worst group of receivers they're facing on the year.
Yeah, with Burks gone, Hopkins gone, Ridley hurt, it's trouble.
Tight end group for the Titans: Chig Okonkwo, Nick Vannett, Josh Wiley, Thomas Adekoya.
Okonkwo is their
Number one.
primary option, but Wiley and Vanett, they still use quite a bit. It's kind of like a 60-40-40 type of thing, right? So that's just because, again, they use a lot of 12. So it'd be a lot of time you're gonna have two of them on the field, probably about 40% of the time, half the time. The other guys, the reserves, are mostly special teamers. They're not that great anyways, but I think Vanett's a good player. Wiles good. I think all three of them are good players. I think they're performing at an average pace, but they're all decent tight ends. They're just not, none of them are exceptional, right? None of them are going to take over a game or anything like that, but they can do a variety of different things. They can get open, they get down the field, they catch the ball, they can block. So I expect to see a lot of those guys this week.
Worth noting that all these skill positions we just mentioned, Calvin Ridley is the only player currently on the roster who averages more than 10 yards per reception. He's up at 15.3. Hopkins traded away was at 11.5. Everybody else under 10 yards reception.
Yeah,
Not
not great.
going down the field very much. Offensive line for the Titans from left to right, J.C. Latham at left tackle, Peter Skoronski at left guard. Center Lloyd Cushenberry III, right guard Dylan Raduns, and right tackle Jalen Duncan, who's listed as doubtful. Reserve tackles are Leroy Watson IV, Nicholas Pettit Frary.
So Latham was their first round pick
Out of
this year.
Alabama.
Skoronski was their first round pick the year prior.
Out of
So
Northwestern.
those are two very good offensive players. They're very good on the left side. I like that side of the line. Cushenberry is average to below average.
Journeyman center.
Randunes is below average, and their right tackle has been a revolving door. Petet Fourie was their starter for four games. Then they went to Duncan, and then they went to, I'm sorry, then they went to Watson, and then last week they went back to Petit Fourie. I don't know if they're going to stick with him again this week because they've already benched him once, but they've gone back. They went back to him last week, so we'll see if they stick again. He was benched for a reason. He's not very good. So if Josh Pascal plays, it's an opportunity for Josh Pascal to have potentially have a decent game. Should be a good opportunity for the Lions interior as well. Depending on, they're going to flip those interior guys back and forth, but whoever is, over the center and the right guard, they're going to have a little easier time than going up against Skoronski.
This is where we would say Aiden Hutchinson is lining up over right tackle.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this would be another 15 pressure, 4 sack type of a game. Yeah, if Aiden was around. So you should expect to see more pass rush production in this game. If you don't, I think a lot of people are going to be hitting the panic button.
Right. Let's flip over to the other side of the ball, talk about Denard Wilson's defense. Is there anything you want to mention about the coaches before we
The
dip
only thing
into
with
the players, the
the only
lineup?
thing with yeah, the only thing with Wilson is that he has been given complete autonomy over the defense. Like it's almost like Callahan doesn't
Can't
care about
handle
the
the
defense.
load?
Well,
That's it.
he's calling plays on offense, designing the offense, plus trying to manage the whole team. And so for defense, he's like, yeah, I oversee the defense during the week, and the defense is part of my overall game plan. But he picks the scheme, he picks the players, he picks the play calls. It's all on Wilson. So it's almost like I don't want to say he's not paying attention because he certainly is, but he's like almost like completely hands off on defense. And I think that's one of the hard parts about when your head coach is also calling plays and so heavily involved in one side of the ball, that you have to have somebody you can trust on the other side of the ball because you're giving them complete control over the defense. So Wilson, a bit of a journeyman, his main influences though come from his time in Baltimore, where he was a secondary coach, and primarily And Mike McDonald, when Mike McDonald was their defensive coordinator, he was Wilson was their secondary coach, and he has tried to implement a similar Baltimore Ravens slash Seattle Seahawks type defense in Tennessee. So the Lions have already seen the Seahawks defense, this season. So they're already going to be somewhat familiar with what Wilson, his main play designs are going to be. There's a lot of philosophies that are brought in here. Like he doesn't blitz like a lot at all. He's one of the bottom seven teams in the league in blitzing. They try to rotate their edge guys, but they don't have very good depth, and so they can't. They use a lot of coverage at the linebacker level, but the linebackers aren't very good at coverage. And they traded one of their starters away as well, which is going to hurt them on top of things. And then they spend a lot of time in their sub packages, spend about 80, 90% of the time with five defensive backs on the field. These are all kind of staples. They don't feel the need to stack the box, and they just lean on their front to stop the run, stop the pressures, and then the hope that, and then they use kind of like a zone shell coverage behind that. And it works in Seattle and in Baltimore because they have talent and they have depth. In Tennessee, they have spot talent where they have some really good players. They have other spots that it's really weak, and they don't have the depth to rotate and keep these guys fresh. And so you're not seeing as high of a level of production. You're going to see numbers. Like if you're just looking at pure numbers, you're going to see some impressive stats. Like, for example, they only allow 272 yards a game. That's best in the NFL. At the same time, they allow 24 points scored on them a game, which is 22nd in the NFL. So those two seem like opposites, even though you would think those would align. Well, the reason is because the offense is so bad, it's putting them in short fields. So when teams are scoring, they're scoring only 40-yard drives instead of 80-yard drives, right? And so
Right.
that keeps the yardage numbers down, and that ends up making them look like they're really good at limiting teams to yardage, but it's really not the defense that's limiting them to yardage as much as it is the end zone that is limiting their yardage. And so that being said, they are good against the run. They are a really good team, and they a lot of the statistics hash out that merit that. But they the scheme just it's not working at its peak because they don't have the talent, and the numbers don't quite match, what you see on paper, or mesh together in a lot of the area. So they can be a little deceiving.
Well, one area where they got a little bit of talent's on the defensive line, three-man front, Sebastian Joseph Day. I only say it's my favorite. Devondre Sweat, who I wanted the Lions pick in the draft,
Last
although
year.
Eric talked me out of it. Yep. And Jeffrey Simmons, two-time Pro Bowler, with James Lynch, Keandre Coburn, and Abdullah Anderson off the bench.
So the way this works is they will utilize the three starters on first down. You will see a four-man front of Simmons, Sweat, Joseph Day, and then an edge rusher. It's going to be Harold Landry. Harold Landry is almost always the other. We'll talk more about him in a minute. But they'll give you a three-man front plus an edge rusher. That'll be your four-man front that line up across from the offensive line. That's first down. It's almost every first down. That's their four-man set. On second down, Joseph Day subs out and another edge rusher comes on, and they essentially are living with just Sweat and Simmons as their interior defenders, and they are playing fantastic. Terrific against the run. Simmons has always been terrific against the run. Sweat was arguably the best run defender in the whole draft last year, and he's showing it in the NFL as well. So very challenging to run against these guys. They also both play between 70 and 80% of snaps, right? And that's also rare. So not only are they producing, but they're on the field a ton. And so that's what makes running on them so hard. You can't get a lot of run up the middle unless you have big, strong offensive linemen to push them around. That's kind of where Zettler comes back into play. So that's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to get runs up the middle, which means could be a tougher day for David Montgomery. But where they get beat up is if you can get past them, there's a lot of open real estate behind them. And a speed option back like Gibbs is a guy who can kind of gash them a little bit more. But Simmons and Sweat are the best two players they have. And well, on defense, the best two players they have on defense, maybe the best two players they have on the team. But they are really, really hard to run against. So we talked about stuff rate before, like stopping running backs at or behind the line of scrimmage. They're the best team in the NFL at it. They are really good at getting stops. And so that's going to be something that I think the Lions are going to have to be conscious of. They're going to have concepts on how to handle Sweat and Simmons. I would expect to see more duo blocks where you're doubling them and then doing singles on your other guys and then trying to create some lanes that way. You can't run duo all the time, but would not be surprising to see that to try and get some movement when you need to get some tough yardage because the Lions are not going to back away. They are going to still want to run the ball. They're one of the best running teams in the NFL. And they're going to like they're number two in DVOA. You just talked about they're number one in adjusted yard lines, which speaks to their offensive line. And they're gaining 155 yards a game on average. That's fourth in the NFL. So like they're still going to run. It's just really a power on power matchup. And Sweat and Simmons are two of the better in the NFL at it at stopping the run.
We're going to see more Parker Hesse in the backfield leading the way, more fullbacks maybe.
It's a great question. I would not be surprised. I think that's he was inactive last week. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him more this week.
Maybe more. They didn't run six offensive linemen very much at all. And maybe I'm wrong.
No,
Maybe I
they
wasn't
didn't.
paying attention, but
They
that's
didn't run not once. Yeah,
so
not
maybe
once. You're
that comes
absolutely
back a
right.
little bit this week.
Sure.
All right.
Could certainly happen.
Linebackers, you already mentioned the edge rusher, the main edge rusher, Harold Landry III. He's a target for some Lions fans since the Tennessee looks to be selling. Arden Key over on the other side. Kenneth Murray Jr. is a off the ball linebacker. Ernest Jones traded away to the Seahawks, so but he has started all six games up to this point. Other linebackers include Jerome Baker, Jack Gibbons, Otis Reese IV, Jalen Harrell, Allie Gay, Caleb Murphy, and James Williams. Oh, and Luke Gifford. Tons of linebackers. But as you said, not all of them play, and the starters play a lot.
So if we look just at the edge guys, Landry, Murphy, Key, Harrell, and Gay, all five of those guys will play. Like I said, Wilson mirrors what he's seen in Baltimore and in Seattle, essentially, or Seattle scheme, where he likes to rotate the edge guys. Harold Landry, though, he's a guy who just doesn't leave the field, plays 80, 90% of the snaps. It's Key, the other starter who doesn't see the field as much, still sees it about 60% of the time, maybe a little bit more depending on the week. But he's the guy who comes in like on second and third downs as opposed to the first. Now, Key is a guy that a lot of people like. I know, like, Harold Landry, but I want to show the difference between Harold Landry and Key because a lot of people kind of view them as the same type of player. Harold Landry plays between 80 and 90% of snaps. He is the eighth best run defender in on the edge in the NFL, according to PFF. Key is kind of just average. He's right kind of in the middle of the pack, maybe even below average. Harold Landry has 40% of the team's sacks and 30% of the team's pressures just by himself. Arden Key has about 25% of the team's pressures and just one sack on the whole season, and that came last week. So he's not the same player. And he plays 60% of the snap versus eight. Like He's not sampling. Harold Landry is really the problem. You're going to have to be conscious of him more than you are of Key. Key is a guy I think the Lions offensive line can handle. Harold Landry will be the guy that they'll have to know where he is ahead of,
Focus on.
ahead of the snap, right? So Murphy is a guy they got, and Caleb Murphy, I liked him. He went undrafted in 2023. He's an interesting edge rusher. I think he has some talent. Jalen Harrell, out of Michigan, plays about 25 to 40% of snaps, and then Gay gets kind of the leftovers after that. Harrell, he's got some tackles for loss and stuff, but I don't think he might have one sack if he has any at all. That it's just they're young and not overly talented beyond the two starters. Now, inside, that's where it gets really wonky because Ernest Jones was their starter and he got traded for Jerome Baker. Baker has been with the team for one day, Thursday. He didn't even practice. He was just working with trainers off to the side. So he has no scheme knowledge, but he came from Seattle, who runs a very similar scheme. So it's possible they try and use him, but I do not expect them to try and start him by any means. Like, he's not going to be a guy who comes in and is ready to start, which means they're going to have to replace their Ernest Jones, who was playing every snap on defense for them. Kenneth Murray is the other off the ball linebacker. He played between 80 snaps and 100 snaps. That'll surely be 100 for him. He's not great. I know he's a name that people like, but I don't think he's that great of a player. And then Jack Gibbons is the only other linebacker that actually gets playing time. And he was only getting between 0 and 20% of snaps. Like, some games he got zero, some games he got about 20. He's going to have to go up to like 80% of snaps if Jerome Baker doesn't start. So, like, this is kind of the same thing like at receiver. You're going to ask a guy who was playing about 20% of snaps to all of a sudden play 80, right? And that's a tough ask. And I think there's a reason that why they weren't starting to begin with. So now you're putting a non-starting level player into a starting lineup, and the Lions should be the beneficiaries of that. So while the Titans' defensive line is really good, their second level is not. And that means when you get a run that gets past the front four, you should have opportunities to take advantage of the linebacking core. If you're trying to beat the zone, the intermediate zone is where you're going to find the most success. So that's Amon-Ra territory. That's Sam Laporta territory. That's maybe Khalif Raymond territory. Like, those are the guys that I'm looking at this defense and saying, those are the guys that should just eat. Like, just get them the ball and let them get some yak type of thing. So this middle of the field linebacker level is rough. It's they just gave away their best player, and the backup's not going to be ready yet. So it's going to be an opportunity for them to for the Lions to take advantage.
Defensive backfield, starting with the corners. They got a L'Jarius Sneed, Jarvis Brownlee Jr., Roger McCreary, Trey Avery, Daryl Baker Jr., Gabe Judy, Lally, Chidobe Awuzie, who started three games, is on injured reserve.
Yeah, they got a Awuzie and Sneed in the offseason, hoping to start both of them. Awuzie is on IR, and Sneed did not play last week and has not practiced this week and doesn't look like he's on the path to playing either. So again, the two guys that they targeted and acquired are both going to be looking like both are going to be unavailable. So they're having to turn to a fifth round rookie in Brownlee and a UDFA journeyman in Baker to start on the outside. should be an advantage for the Lions, but surprisingly, I think Brownlee and Baker played pretty well in the against the Bills last week. So I'm not saying it's a huge advantage for the Lions, but certainly advantage from when you were thinking it was going to be Awuzie and Snead. So McCreary's okay. I don't know how well he'll play Amon-Ra, and they run a lot of zone anyways. And so the way that I mean they run zone everywhere and at any time. It's really there's no rhyme. I mean there's no like it's not like oh they're in the red zone they're going to shift the man. They're all they're in the red zone or I'm sorry they're in zone a lot. The guy who's the best man, the best beater of zone coverage is Amon-Ra. And I think Khalif is solid at it as well. And again, I think this sets up for Laporta as well. So it's a another opportunity where they're going to kind of play a shell zone coverage, and your whichever wide receivers can beat those shells, those are the guys you're going to go to, which means again, I expect it to be lots of Amon-Ra. And I think if you look back at Seattle, it was Gibbs and Amon-Ra who did the most damage. And that's what I'm expecting again this week. I'm expecting to see a lot of Gibbs involved in a running game, also in the passing game. And then Amon-Ra catches like six, seven, 12 balls this week because he should be able to go and attack their zone. Because I think he has a big advantage.
Safeties are Amani Hooker and an old lion, Quandre Diggs. Mike Brown also plays. They also have Julius Wood.
So Quandre is really good at run defense, but they play him so far off the ball, like he has a lot of ground to make up in order to get into position where he can play the run. So he ends up instead being a lot of a coverage. I'm sorry, a lot of cleanup tackles and stuff like that against the runs. They will drop him into the box if they feel like they're getting run on, and then that opens up opportunities more down the seam because they'll be running like a single high. That is when I think the Lions will attack when they see Quandre kind of sink down. I think that's when they attack the seams and try and take some deep shots. But most of the time, Quandre is going to be back, and so is Hooker. Hooker is average, maybe even a little bit below average to as far as the safety in the NFL. But he holds a very unique distinction. He is the only player on the entire Titans defense to force a turnover this season. He has three. He has an interception and two forced fumbles. Not a single defensive player on the Titans defense has created a turnover other than Hooker. So, it's definitely something that they struggle with. Their offense turns the ball over. Their defense doesn't get it back. And that's part of the reason why they're 1-5.
All right, that's it for the defense. Going to the special teams group, the kicker is Nick Folk, journeyman kicker. It's 17 years in the NFL, 40 years old. He's probably the best he's been. His field goal make percentage is he's hasn't missed one yet, 9-9 this year, and 29 of 30 in the previous season. Never had a big leg, right? His longest field goal he's ever made is 56 yards. But longest field goal he made this year is 53 yards. So a steady kicker, nothing spectacular. And they're going to have to be, the Titans are going to have to be down at the 36-yard line or closer to be able to get 3 points. So that's good news for the Lions.
He's a guy they purposely went out and got this offseason. They liked what he did, and he's been paying him back.
75% of his kickoffs are touchbacks. The punter is Ryan Stonehouse, who's got a pretty big leg, averaging 51.6 yards per kick, but his net punting average is only 37. So they give up a lot in punt return yardage.
I don't have, yeah. It's and they're not great at on the other, I mean, they're okay on the other side too. So yeah, it's they're one of the worst units, like you said, 32 in DVOA. So it's it they're a they struggle in a lot of areas on special teams, even with Nick Folk having a really good season.
Stonehouse has had two punts blocked this year. He was a second
That's
team All-Pro as a rookie.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't help, right? That definitely factors in.
He in the last so in his first two this is his third season, his first two seasons, he did lead the NFL in yards per punt average at 53.1 both years. So he's got a big leg, booming legs. So if they're buried, you might be able to get him out of there. Return man's Jaquan Jackson. He returns both kicks and punts. Pretty good return average on kicks, 26.9 yards per return. More mundane at returning punts.
I agree with that. I think he's that's really all he does. I wonder if he will get more
They're going to have
involved in
to plug him.
offense.
Yeah, they're going to
Yeah.
have to.
Yeah.
He's the fourth wide receiver now. They only got four of them. If Ridley does not play.
I mean, they have three practice squad wide receivers, but I mean, I don't know. I think if he's, yeah, I don't know if any of them are gonna like jump him on the offensive side of the ball, because obviously he gives them a lot on special teams, but he doesn't give them a whole bunch of offensive snaps on a regular basis. So this is pretty much what he does, and it's okay. He's okay at it, but the whole unit struggles.
Morgan Cox is the long snapper. Two tackles on the season.
Yeah, I didn't look anything up on him. I seem to remember like he's a familiar name to me, and I know that he's plays well. But I did not look up any fun facts. I was too busy with looking up all the million other stats that they're terrible at.
Five-time Pro Bowler. He's 38 years old.
There you
He's
go.
played
That's why I
15
know him.
NFL seasons, 1 year as a first team All Pro, spent most of his career with the Baltimore Ravens, last 4 years with the Titans.
There you go.
That's it.
I got you last week because
Yeah, I
you,
picked the Vikings to win.
yeah. Look, you're not, you weren't alone. That's for sure. I, 10.5 points is really
It's a big number. In the
a
NFL, it's a big
ton,
number.
right? And I'm not sure, like, if they can reach that or if they should reach that. But at the same time, I could absolutely see them reaching that. I'm not scared of the Titans offense at all. I think the Titans defense is good, but I also think they're susceptible. I hate the predict like a huge score. At the same time, I also don't think it's going to be close. I'm going to
Just spout it out, Eric.
Yeah, I know.
You're
I'm
going to pick the
debating.
Titans to win. This
No, I don't think the Titans, I don't know if the Titans can score more than 10. And I'm like, I definitely think this should be, you should see more points, but I hate to make a prediction where they only score 10, but that's kind of like what I think they're going to score. I will say 27 to 10. I'm going to call it a blowout, even though I don't want
Oh.
to. And I think that goes against the principles of the game, but that's what I expect the score to be, like a 27 to 10, just blow. I just don't think they're ready for what the Lions are. And I think the Lions could steamroll them.
I think you're right that the score can be close and the game could be, a game where the Titans are never really involved. Although there is a route for the Titans to win, stop the
Sure.
run, force the Lions offense to be one-dimensional, where they're not running play action, where Goff is just dropping back and trying to fire receivers, running one-on-one routes with no crazy fake handoffs and layered, crossing routes and all that. So I mean, so there's an outside possibility, although unlikely. I will go under you just because that's, as we talked about, the nature of the game. I'll have the Lions winning 24-17.
Okay. I fully expect to lose this week.
Well, I hope you win in a way because, I mean, I'd love to win the game, but if you win, it means the Lions had a nice dominating win.
It's kind of like what I feel. I feel like they're going to jump all over them, and then it the Vikings just don't, or the Vikings, the Titans just don't have the firepower to kind of stick with them.
Fat and happy fans leaving early,
Yeah,
wandering out of the
exactly.
stadium and be like, no, enjoy this. We don't know how
Yeah,
long it's gonna last.
don't get spoiled.
Don't get spoiled yet.
Oh, by the way, I just checked the line. The line's up to 11 and a half now.
Yeah, well, Lions are a public team, so there's gonna be a lot of Lions money.
Right.
They're gonna push that line higher.
Boy, I've been a bad host when it comes to checking the ratings and stuff like that. You've
No
been on
on the
top of it.
ratings on either one of them. If you want to fire us a rating, go ahead. We'd appreciate it. Even if you don't write a blurb, at least check 5 stars. But if you feel it's not a 5-star level show, check whatever you feel. And we appreciate everybody listening. It's big game Saturday night, Eric. I don't know if we want to
Oh
talk
yeah.
about it at all.
No, we can. We
The
can.
teams are
I mean,
going in kind of separate directions. But
I don't even know what to think of it, to be honest.
Wolverines favored by 5 currently. Game will be at the Big House. Wolverines on a 3-game winning streak. One of the most dominating performances in the 2023 game, a 49-0 win at a Spartan Stadium. One of the saddest games I've ever had to watch. That was at Spartan Stadium, right?
Wait, say that one more time.
Last year's game.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
that's what
think. Jeez, now I'm blanking.
I used to be able to like spout off what happened in each game in succession. Now that I'm getting old.
I don't know. I'm not putting money on this game by any stretch,
Well, no,
but
I
do you feel like that spread is accurate? Because I don't think that spread is accurate.
don't know. I'd say it's pretty accurate. Like, it's going to be in Ann Arbor. Wait. Maybe I should ask a question. What do you think the spread should be? Maybe that's the
Like
question we need to ask.
one,
Well,
like
no, because Michigan, they're at home, so you're going to
know.
get the 3 points there. And they're still Michigan. It would be
Yeah.
hard to, push the game towards the Spartans' favor. That Michigan does have a stronger offensive line. The defense, under Wink Martindale has been very questionable, but they still have 2 first-round draft picks down in the trenches. And when the Spartans' offensive line is weak, although seemingly improving over the last few weeks, I would assume any Michigan fan would rather have Aiden Childs under center than anything they've got, even though he's a anything that you guys have between Tuttle and Warren and Orji, even though Childs is a turnover machine, except for the last 2 weeks where he's only turned over the ball once.
It's
It's the
the
Spartans
quarterback.
have better skill position players overall, although it is like Michigan's Mullings is a better running back than anything Michigan State has. Well, I don't know. Maybe you'd rather have Nick Marsh than Khalil Mullings. I would say
No,
you'd
I
rather
like
have
Mullins. I
Mullings
like
than
Mullins for
Marsh.
quite a bit. I have no confidence in Michigan's
No, you
quarterback.
shouldn't.
Yeah, okay. Well
Not
then,
this
good.
year.
Good. Then I don't. Then I'm right. My read is correct. Yeah,
Well,
they don't.
they've had it rough recently.
Yeah. I don't understand going to like a 12th year senior that has never been good and
No other
expecting
options.
No, you have other options, don't they? Don't they have like a freshman like
They
that's
do have a
supposed to...
freshman they're redshirting, so they must not feel comfortable with him
And
running
then
the
I.
offense yet. And I would assume they wouldn't. It would be interesting if they did throw him out there in this game. Like, well, all right, your first career game is going to be against Michigan
Sure.
State. Go ahead.
But I'm also of the philosophy that if you are if you have a handful of quarterbacks and none of them are good, then you default to the one who can run because that
Right.
just
Yeah.
gives
No,
you
that's a good
another
point.
option.
I was
And if
hoping they came out of the bye week. Michigan came out of the bye week just running the full army offense. Get Orgy out there, only
Sure.
run that army offense. You know,
Sure.
we've changed everything. Play to your strengths.
Go the Penn State route and do what they did against Penn State last year. Just
Right.
run it 25 times.
Yeah.
That's honestly the point that I'm at. The point that I'm at is I'd like to just see them run because I've watched the quarterback play that I've watched has been really horrible. And so I'm okay. I'm sad that it's not going to be a better game.
I don't know. This might, all of this might be turning it into a good game. You know, the Spartans
Really?
aren't great or anything. They played really well against, like, shockingly well against Iowa last week, where they were really good on both sides of the ball. They gave up the, you know, like 32-20, but the 7 of those points was just the 75-yard run, which they gave up out of nowhere. But that still shows the Spartans are susceptible to the big play. There is a lot to like about the Spartans, though. Like going back to the offensively, like Mullings is probably the best player, but skill wise, you know, for either team. But Nick Marsh is looking really good. Like, you'd rather have a list of the Spartans guys after the Montori Foster, even Kayron Lynch Adams, you know, and Jack Velling. Although you'd rather have, well, never mind, Colston Loveland is probably above Mullings. I'm sorry, like,
Oh,
I'm not as versed about Michigan as you
no,
are,
it's
but.
all right. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, Loveland's going to be a high pick.
And
He's just not utilized as well.
the Spartan defense has been a lot better than I thought. And because, you know, after spring practice, when they lost their two starting defensive tackles, Barrow and Harmon played great for Oregon a couple of weeks ago, I thought, well, you know, the Spartans are done for. But maybe they weren't going to get all the playing time they assumed because they do have some good defensive tackles on the roster, and they've been playing well. I think Michigan's going to win. I think that 5 is a good number, but, you know. See, this is another thing. They're giving the Spartans hope. There's hope going into this game.
Well, I have no confidence. I don't feel like I'm gonna enjoy the game.
Well,
I
you've
will.
enjoyed the last 3, so, or the
Yeah.
last 2, I should say. Yeah, it's not even the last 3.
I will sit down, I will watch it, and we'll see how it goes. So we're nearing the end of this podcast. We're also I have the Vikings Rams game on in the background. I think you do
28-20.
as well. Yeah, we're at the 2-minute warning, so I don't think we can drag our podcast on to see
No,
how
we're
that
not going
ends.
to. Yeah.
So listeners,
Well,
you
it's
will have
plus it's
no
meaningless to the listeners. They'll already know what happened by the time they listen to this.
exactly. You know what happened.
Yeah.
So either the
Hopefully it was a
Lions,
Ram win.
even the Lions hang, yeah, hopefully the
Rams
curse,
hold on.
the
Yeah, the curse
Lions,
continues.
hopefully the Lions hangover curse continues, and it'd be fantastic. It'd be fun to see. It'd be wins across the board for the Lions because the second place team in the NFC takes a loss. A team that you have already beaten gets the win. And so you're happy. You're happy as a Lions fan with the result if this thing holds. So
And hopefully be extra happy on Sunday afternoon after the Lions hopefully pull out a nice win against the Titans. So that's all we got for this time, Eric. So until next time, let's go Lions.